This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Well, happy Monday, the 14th of April. It's a very happy day for the Democratic Alliance. Not such a happy day for those who occupy Luthuli House. Reason? For the first time ever, the DA has surpassed the ANC in voter sentiment. It's moved above the ANC for the very, very first time. This as a result of a poll that was conducted by the Institute for Race Relations. Let's pick up on that story immediately with the IRR's Herman Pretorius.
Well, the headline can only be one thing, and that is that the DA, as you say, now on 30.3%, has overtaken the ANC on 29.7% for the first time in IRR polling history. Now, that is a marginal, a slight lead, but a lead nonetheless. And as you say, something that might have been absolutely unthinkable 30 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, even, you know, 2-3 years ago, if we think about the popularity that President Ramaphosa had when he came into office. But what is so incredible about this is we didn't plan on having an opinion poll in the field at the moment that the budget blew up in Parliament. But my word, what a coincidence that gave us unique insights into what South African politics could become if the type of debate that dominated Parliament comes to dominate our political landscape heading into the next election cycle.
What is interesting is immediately post six months after the May 2024 election, the ANC had actually gone up and the DA barely moved. So what happened there, and what has, taking the VAT out of it, what has happened subsequent to that, which has seen this dramatic change in fortunes? If we just put the VAT on one side, is there anything else that
overall frustration with the fact that ANC policy seems to dominate despite the GNU being widely popular? If we look at the polling, the GNU was, even before the election, South Africans considered it a desirable outcome. This idea of getting the parties to work together, this belief that a constructive relationship between the ANC and the DA could bring out the best in the ANC, that the GNU could actually help the ANC rediscover its pragmatism, its sort of policy framework that delivered massive economic growth in the first 10 years, where we saw the number of Black South Africans in employment double between 1994 and the 2010s. So there was this aspiration, this hope that the ANC in the GNU would listen, as it were, to the better angels of their nature, with the DA playing a powerful role in getting the ANC to do that, instead of a chastised, humbled ANC returning to a sort of pragmatism. We've seen the opposite, and we've seen NHI being pushed aggressively forward, despite not being a popular policy. We've seen expropriation without compensation. Same story happening. We've seen a doubling down, a tripling down, a quadrupling down on BEE regulations and this new transformation fund announced along racial lines that simply do not register with the South African public as feasible solutions. So the ANC benefited from the GNU initially because there was this idea that, now we're going to get the crazies out of the room, the people who've been radicalizing the ANC, who've been dragging them from away from the pragmatic center. And then that turned out not to be the case. And the VAT issue just sort of broke through the sound barrier on that, crystallized it to show that sort of like Margaret Thatcher by 1990, the ANC has lost its connection to listen to the public. All iron ladies start to rust at a certain point. And when a political party as formidable as the ANC loses the ability to read what the public is telling them, you see this sort of electoral and political earthquake happening.
A political earthquake. And it indeed is the case. Interesting that the poll was done at the time that there was all the fight about the budget. I'd suggest that you go and watch that full interview with Herman Pretorius. He unpacks to a large degree exactly what happened or what the results were in the IRR's poll. Remember, the IRR has been around for 96 years. They do polls all the time, two a year on the political temperature. And so you've got a lot of credibility that's coming out here. It's also consistent with what we've been seeing with the ANC. The most recent poll from the Social Research Foundation showed the ANC had fallen down to 32%, now below 30%, and not surprising if you consider what has happened over the last few weeks, where the ANC are promoting a VAT hike, a hike in the value-added tax, whereas the DA took the other side of the fence, and both the DA and the other opposition, well, opposition parties outside of the Government of National Unity, the MK and the EFF, benefiting from that stance. Parties inside the GNU who supported the VAT increase, the Patriotic Alliance, and more seriously, the IFP, have really got hammered as a result of that. Man, this political situation in South Africa is fascinating. Well, after a short break, the Sunday show with Chris Steyn and Neil de Beer was back again yesterday, and they had a lot to talk about. Chris had been away in Israel for the previous week, and indeed we've got a wonderful clip from the piece that she put together from the work that she did in Israel, finding a balance between both sides. I thought it was particularly well done by Chris. We'll have that clip towards the end of the program today. But in the Sunday show, they picked up on the quite dramatic proposals that the ANC are suggesting for private security companies, or in essence, disarming them, taking away even pepper spray and handcuffs, let alone firearms. Here's what Neil de Beer had to say about it.
And lastly, Chris, this new very controversial amendment to the security bill, which deserves a quick 2 minutes, is atrocious. So, Chris, while we were away, CIRA, the controlling body of security, has decided to do an amendment bill that is, in actual fact, going to, in my opinion, destroy the security companies and the capability they have. Chris, this is shocking. More than 500,000 security officers on the beat and just a few of nearly 120,000 police. Now, Chris, if we are going to remove their guns, if we are going to remove the capability, anarchy, I can tell you, is coming. So this bill needs to be fought with everything of civil society. They are trying to say to us as the public a bunch of hogwash that we are now going to suppress criminality. We don't need more laws, Chris. We are now going to issue a bloody security guard with a ketty, a probable Vimbux, and a claylat with a candle because he's not even allowed to use pepper spray or handcuffs. So, Chris, clearly this is a dumb move. This is arrogant. And they forget that we know the law. So when I was asked, is this law going to tighten up people that are criminals within security? No, because criminals don't abide by the law. And then finally, Chris, there is something called the Firearms Control Act, specifically Section 21 and 22. Go read it, which allows the police and the law to curb people that are misusing firearms. So why bring in another level of draconian law when the only people that will abide by it is the legal companies who will lose their weapons because they are now being told they can't take weapons into a mall, into a public space, and if you know there's a riot, you have to apply 7 days before it. Who the donor do you know there's going to be a land invasion or a riot on Tuesday? Because that's the whole point, Fracky. They don't tell you. They just arrive. So by the time they are on the land or they are rioting, nou moet jy jou e-pos skryf. What a absolute ice cream award, Chris, to Mr. Mchunu and the rest of CIRA. You come here? Is you by me? Get yourselves one. Unbelievable what we are seeing in this country. More laws, just less implementation. We're going to watch this one, Chris, and we will keep our favorite BizNews family totally abreast of the situation.
And that's our favorite commentator, Neil De Beer. It really is. He comes up with a wonderful turn of phrase. There's a new one for us, the Ice Cream Award. Wow. Well, on Friday, I had an in-depth discussion with an international trade expert, Jan Herman. He spent a decade and a half at the DTI here in South Africa. Then he was seconded to the Geneva-based World Trade Organization for 17 years. Very senior in that organization. He retired a few years ago, but he has kept a close watch on what's happening in international trade. If you really want to understand what Donald Trump is trying to do and why America is in the position that it is and China is in the position that it's in, well, go and watch that interview. Johan unpacks the whole story right from the ascension of China into the World Trade Organization. In a nutshell, the Chinese have gamed the system. They've played it beautifully. They've taken huge amounts of benefits from it. And as a result, you've had this dislocation in trade where the Chinese have got most of the benefits and the Americans have lost their industry. That's all pretty much being exported. But Johan tells it much better. However, I would suggest that we pick up just here, just a short clip from that conversation, which will give you an insight into the biggest story of the moment.
This whole thing is all about China with a big C. China. But if you isolate the Chinese, you're in serious trouble. Then you have 1.4 billion Chinese against you. And surely you don't want that. So if China is lumped together with other countries, then they might complain, but they won't get aggressive. So that's why all friends of the U.S. were also included. Well, that's my take on it. That's why the EU was also included. Now, the EU then said, okay, we're thinking of retaliating, but they did not retaliate. And then the announcement came. So that was out of jail card for Trump on the EU, because now we can tell the Chinese, but the EU did not retaliate. You retaliated. So by default, China has isolated themselves, which changes the ball game. But there was sort of a little bit of a bumpy road the last couple of days. Whether it's going to get smoother or not, I don't know. It's risky days.
Johan, if you look at it again as a neutral observer, and given the background that China has gamed the system, they've had all the advantages. Trump is saying no more. We want to claw back some of those advantages, reindustrialize America, etc. Is this likely to remain a situation where China is isolated? Because if you can't, as Chinese, export into the United States, you got a heck of a lot of products that you're going to be wanting to export elsewhere, including South Africa and other friends, or even they don't even have to be friends. Chinese goods are going to be flooding into other markets. Is that not a recipe for even more instability going forward? Because if other countries now decide we can't allow Chinese steel at a fraction of the price of what we can produce it here, coming into the country, and we've got to put up barriers or trade barriers against China as well, it could really escalate into something very dangerous.
Yes, no, I agree with you, because the US can say, okay, we've sort of isolated ourselves, we can manage, but what about the rest of the world? And I agree with you, because you would find massive, massive trade diversion. And the first diversion would be to the way that I see it is to the EU, because they have a significant market. And then wherever the Chinese companies can sell their products, they're going to flood them. And the question then is whether you have the instruments to address these things. And that's where the WTO comes a little bit short on what we call the trade remedies. And that was my particular field of expertise. Is these instruments are there, but they take time You can't just act and block imports, but okay, and increase tariffs, but okay, the US has done it. So is this now going to be a free for all? If I have a flood of products coming from wherever into my market and it's going to kill my industry, will politicians not say, okay, I have a national emergency now, and therefore I suspend the WTO provisions against the exporter, whoever that is going to be, to sort things out. But that's sort of also another sort of very delicate issue. Now, it's really, really scary times. There's no question in my mind about it.
Scary times. Pretty much everywhere you look at the moment, there's a lot of chaos, and that is hopefully going to lend to a better order in future. Well, certainly that's what Donald Trump and his guys are trying to achieve. Whether they'll get it right, high risk. China's BYD is a company that I remember hearing first at a Berkshire Hathaway AGM. One of the big supporters or fans of the company was none other than Charlie Munger, the late Charlie Munger. Well, it's got a presence now in Cape Town. It's moving aggressively around the world. It makes, sort of making batteries, now it makes electric vehicles. And here's a story on BYD moving into Cape Town from our partners at Bloomberg.
Rush hour in Cape Town. Transport's a major source of emissions, but one bus company is trying to foster change. Golden Arrow transports over 240,000 commuters daily across the city. It's in the process of replacing 10% of its 1,100-strong fleet with electric models made by China's BYD.
We're buying something like 25 million liters of diesel every single year. So we needed to look at what was possible.
Bloomberg NEF estimates that e-buses globally will save the equivalent of almost 2 million barrels of oil demand per week.
Electric buses are playing a really important role in reducing emissions. What we can see is that about 250,000 barrels of oil demand per day are being displaced by electric buses around the world. That's initially been led out of China, but we're now seeing rapid uptake in places like Africa and other parts of the world. And then the second area is around improving urban air quality through things like reducing NOx emissions, nitrogen oxide emissions, and particulate emissions.
BYD buses are found in over 300 cities worldwide.
By purchasing 120 buses, we are literally reducing our carbon output by 10%, which is significant, and obviously hoping to make our air healthier, reduce our carbon emissions.
These buses are shipped fully assembled from Asia to Cape Town. But that's something President Cyril Ramaphosa wants to change. South Africa will soon offer 150% tax break for local EV production. The hope is that companies like BYD will start manufacturing their vehicles locally, lowering costs for buyers and creating jobs. Globally, electric bus sales fell 27% in 2023, as Chinese sales and incentives in the U.S. slowed. While the market may get a boost from Europe as buses there transition to zero emissions in the years ahead, the real growth is expected to come from the developing world. And hopes for the environment will ride on expectations there will be more bus companies in Africa fueling a greener expansion.
In the world of business banking, the bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
At SunExchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
Interesting story, that one. Well, global supply chains are taking strain, not just because of Trump tariffs, but everything else that seems to be happening at the moment. And one of the people who should know, well, better than most about what's coming next is the chief executive of one of the biggest distribution companies in the world, DHL. Our partners at Bloomberg spoke to the chief executive there, Tobias Mayer.
What's going to happen going forward is very uncertain. We heard those comments from the President of the United States earlier that they are looking now at electronics from a different angle, from a different angle of security, national security, the Section 232 of the U.S. Code. So I think for our customers, there's still a lot of uncertainty out there.
Yeah, the thing is, tariffs are coming. It just depends on how high they are. I'm just wondering, in terms of activity, are you seeing customers front-loading exports? What are you seeing?
I think in the last wave of tariffs being announced, that was not as big as we expected it and as we've seen it in the past. I think people getting really a bit tired. They don't know, even if something's announced, whether 2 days later it's not changed again. So you really see some fatigue of decision makers in manufacturing and also in the distribution sector.
Where's the pain being felt the most? Is it in the U.S. market?
Well, what we've seen is when in February the de minimis was gone, those shipments under $800 that currently don't require formal clearance, don't attract duties and taxes at all when it comes to imports in the U.S., when that was gone, the number of entries that Customs and Border Patrol had to process basically doubled overnight, and that was a real operational hurdle. I think now it's more customers, manufacturing companies trying to figure out where to put production, where to put inventory to best position themselves. And that's something that's very difficult.
Hey, lots of people having lots of head scratching at the moment. Well, our Chris Stain, as mentioned earlier in the program, was away last week. She was in the Middle East and having a look around at what is behind the conflict that is grabbing our headlines. She spoke to a lot of people, brought a lot of footage back, and she's compiled that into a wonderful one-hour documentary, I guess you could put it. But here's a little clip from parts of that show that mention South Africa. Here's Chris with some insights.
Across the border in Jerusalem, I spoke to Haviv Gur, a political analyst and senior political correspondent for the Times of Israel. He had something to say about South Africa.
You think that Israel doesn't give a shit about South Africa taking it to the International Criminal Court. Why?
Israelis have a hard time believing the world's sort of moral debate about the war. And maybe they're justified and maybe they're not justified, but what it is that they see is a South Africa that had diplomatic relations with Assad. When Assad killed 600,000 Syrians. It's not whataboutist, it's selective outrage, right? We're seeing South Africa focus in on one place, one argument. And Gaza is suffering terribly, terribly. But that's not what a genocide is. There's actually a meaning to genocide. If genocide no longer actually involves the kind of mass death you had in Syria, Assad oversaw the death of something like 10 to 15 times the death toll in Gaza. And if the death toll in Gaza horribly, and hopefully it never does, but rises because the war returns in a big way, which I don't expect it to, but nevertheless, if that does happen, it'll take years of this to equal what happened in Syria. And South Africa has not taken Assad to the ICJ or the ICC personally or anything like that on any criminality. And I'm not just saying Israel's not as bad as Assad, so it's not bad. It is arguable that Israel fought badly in Gaza. And certainly there's a large civilian death toll, and so that question is important and legitimate and fundamental and should be asked. But this, you know, genocide and apartheid and colonialism, every bad word thrown at one country.
Back in Tel Aviv, former Knesset member Ruth Wasserman Lande, who also advised former President Shimon Peres and was a former deputy ambassador to Egypt, spoke about how her focus is beyond the conflict between Gaza and Israel and is firmly on Iran. She also has something to say about South Africa's relationship with that country.
Decent people in South Africa. Okay? I don't need to tell you, you know better than me. The government of South Africa has sold many of its assets, whether we like it or not, it's politically correct or not, to the Islamic Republic of Iran and many of its debts. Hence, the Iranians hold the South African government to some extent, not a small extent, accountable to it and its interests, not the interests of the South African people, that many still suffer economic issues, destabilization, issues of infrastructure, and again, politically correct or not, we all know that it's true, okay?
But where's the evidence of that?
The evidence that many people in South Africa don't have what they deserve?
The assets that they sold to Iran.
Well, there are certain agencies that do intelligence-related work that is economic, okay? Every once in a while, statements are being made. For example, the head of intelligence in the United States has said, after October 7th, as if for us Israelis it was hello, good morning, obviously, but this was a statement made by the United States, that the Iranian Islamic Republic of Iran was funding a lot of the demonstrations against Israel. Lo and behold, there weren't spontaneous demonstrations, there were pre-organized demonstrations that very, very, very surprisingly began before Israeli IDF even went into Gaza, after our people were raped, massacred, and murdered. And there were suddenly all these demonstrations all over the place, poof, 2 seconds after the attack. So this is one of the issues that came out. But likewise, other issues came out regarding the relationship between the Islamic Republic of Iran and the South African government. And these are difficult allegations that I'm making, and I stand behind them. Not politically correct allegations, but there is a lot to be done for the people, a lot of the good people of South Africa, and there is a relationship between those two countries. And I will go even further to say that this is the reason why the South African government went to the ICC and stood against Israel in the International Court of Law, and not because the people of South Africa have an issue with Israel, the Holy Land, and or the Jewish people.
Sure. Well, the Knesset, by the way, is the Israeli parliament, in case you were wondering. There's a heck of a lot more to Chris's visit over there that you will find on BizNews TV. There's also some more real in-depth information for you if you want context and be better informed. You know where to go to. I'll be back again with BizNews Briefing tomorrow. Until then, cheerio. This BizNews Briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to private banking service now for your business.